FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's April 25th, 2018, and, well, we promised last time we're going to talk about privacy, free speech on the web, social media platforms, etc. And Danielle Park is with us now. If you haven't checked out her site, you should do it right away, jugglingdynamite.com. Danielle is a prolific writer, really puts out insightful commentary. Hey, and if you haven't done it yet, send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com. We'd love for you to be part of the show. And so, Danielle, freedom of speech for thee, but not for me, huh? That's what the internet is turning into, isn't it? And of course, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Well, wasn't it always about controlling the message, controlling people's right to challenge the status quo? You know, and if history teaches us anything, it tells us that that pattern is constant throughout, and no matter what government or oversight body is in control at a particular time, ultimately it comes, it evolves to that. You know, that's why typically governments change teams, so to speak, every, you know, 10 years maximum, two terms, and they tend to get pushed out because so much reinforcement of controlling that power that is starts to take over, and all sorts of nasty things happen. And, you know, if there's a democratic process that's at all viable, the people tend to vote them out and try and refresh the system, so to speak. But, you know, the internet has just brought so much more opportunity for us to be the pawns in these schemes.
Hey, and look, during the election, it was very obvious. Of course, Silicon Valley is a very left-leaning place. And, you know, you would go to Google and you type in Donald Trump and it would autocomplete is the Antichrist. And then you type in Hillary Clinton and it pops up a picture with Hillary and Mother Teresa. Now, most people are probably immune from it, but some study said that undecided voters are particularly susceptible to these algorithms that are obvious if you look. I mean, they're just obvious. He didn't really admit it during his testimony. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg didn't really admit that this was happening. He said, oh, it's a forum for all ideas, but the ones that we like and relate to get promoted the best, and the others get put on the back shelf. But it's a real thing that they're doing, and that's just one example. I mean,
you know,
there's thousands more.
Yeah, but I would say that we really miss the plot here if we start focusing on which political party is getting access to our information to pummel us with their particular worldview. Because the truth of the matter is that this is about big business sponsorship, controlling whatever it is we see, think, or are delivered in terms of information. And it's not about, you know, one political party or the other. Big corps are using it for whatever way they want. And we are just the users. You know, we're not the customers. We're the users. We're the pawns. And the deal with the devil that we've made here is that we wanted all this stuff for free, right?
Yeah.
So these models are delivered to us as, here, look at this great thing. It costs you zero. Well, the instant something costs us zero, we should be asking ourselves, well, then who's paying for this? How can this clearly can't be zero? So in many cases, it's, you know, issuing securities, investors buying things, shares or bonds that allow cash to continue a business model that's actually making no money or indeed burning through huge amounts of money. And that's been this whole social media construct over the last decade, the rise of these businesses that are actually not economically viable, but they have been able to raise tons of cheap money in financial markets. And in doing so, they have crushed legitimate participants who are not able to access that free money. You know, whether it's taxi drivers versus Uber, whether it's other news, legitimate journalistic enterprises being crushed by you know, social media, that's the go-to for information. But ultimately, we have to ask ourselves, then who's paying for it, or how are we paying for it if we're not paying for it in an upfront, transparent fee? And I think that's the question we need to start with, because we all play some role in our own demise here when we don't ask those questions and we just freely trust because it's easier than to think.
Okay, well, Apple's CEO Tim Cook said Apple sells products to people, but with social media, their customers' data, their users' data, not really their customer, the people themselves, the users, are the product. And that's really the problem here. And look, I just gave the example because it's obvious that you see this on YouTube, you see it on Facebook, you see it all over the internet where they filter and they particularly go against the people on the right. But the thing is there'll come a time when they're just doing it against people on the left, because one moment they're doing it to your enemies, the next minute they're doing it to you. So it doesn't really matter which side they're doing it. I mean, they've done it to me for years at YouTube. I mean, I used to get tens of thousands of downloads, change the algorithm, lucky to get a few hundred on an episode. And I'm doing everything the same way as I always did it. So there's a lot more to this than meets the eye, but certainly maybe they need to be treated as fiduciaries also. They're taking information that's very personal to you, very close, near and dear to your heart, potentially harmful, and they're monetizing it and perhaps using it in ways that's against your interest. If not now, then at some point they certainly will be.
Listen, it's endemic, as I say, in these models where the sponsors are the people paying the bills. So the same thing, for example, has swept through traditional media where, for example, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I was asked to do a CNBC show fixated on commodity selection. This was in 2011. And I said, gee, thanks for the request. I'd love to be on CNBC, but there's no way I can be promoting commodities as a hot investment sector right now, because all of our analysis suggests that the secular peak is in, that prices are going to go down, that these stocks are a nightmare for investment for the next few years, and it's going to just hurt your viewers. And they said, thank you very much. We'll find someone else. You know, the same thing
sure
when you're asked to speak in conferences in the financial business. More and more over the past few years, it's been, well, we'd love to have you, but which 5 stocks will you recommend? And if you say, well, I'm not prepared to recommend individual stocks, or I'm not prepared to tell people they should be buying whatever it is you're selling, they say, well, thank you very much. We'll find other speakers. And yet they're promoted to the attendees as experts. No one's talking about who's sponsoring the experts and why their message is the way it is. But that's the reality. So this is long before social media, of course. This is just the very nature of a sponsored platform where you're not actually paying. And I always said the model should be that the conference attendee pay a fee for someone to, you know, provide a transparent program where they say, okay, the customer is actually the attendee, not the speaker or the security seller or the financial company that promotes all the stuff on, for example, Bloomberg and all this. You know, they're all shaping the message. And I thought that was really interesting. I mentioned on the blog today, I saw Ed Asner last night in Barrie, Ontario, you know, in a small town north of Toronto. And I thought it was pretty amazing. So we went to see. And he was basically talking about the exact same thing that happened to the Lou Grant show in the early 80s, you know, where he was involved in activist stuff. He got critical of the Reagan government's role in South America, and he got back up to, you know, the network sponsors, and they didn't care for his message, and his show was canceled. So this is, again, this is a long-standing, you know, thing. And I think the only thing we can do, we can't change human nature or the propensity of powers that be to control information, but transparency and people being aware that if you sign up for something for free, then you're the product.
Yeah, you really are. And what about the concept of declaring them public utilities, of at least refer to them as common carriers? So they've got to carry all speech, and they've got to protect you, the user, rather than selling you out to all the sponsors in many ways they've done. I mean, I knew Facebook, when they went public, was going to be huge. At the time, if you remember, it was like 4 years ago. They didn't have their ad platform optimized. They really didn't know how to sell advertising, but boy, did they learn quickly. And there's one other thing about Facebook, and I'd venture to say it probably applies to a number of other platforms. Facebook was formed, at least if you believe what you see on the internet, and again, it might not be exact, but it was started February 4th, 2004. On exactly the same date, the Defense Department, through DARPA, which is a Defense Advanced Research Project Administration, discontinued a project called LifeLog, whose purpose was to track every individual, every citizen's interactions with others, all their phone calls, what movies they went to see, what trips they've gone on. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like something we all know and hate?
Yeah, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. I noticed a story that there is a new startup out of Washington that is going to be having simultaneous satellite mapping of the world. Major investors have already got behind this, and it's going to enable us to see to see the planet and monitor everything from outer space in real time. Right now, you can do that, but at a lag, and the footage is typically not, you know, released until after the fact. Mm. But in this new system, it's going to be, you know, in simultaneous projection. So that means that ultimately, we're all susceptible or we will all be being watched. Mm. And, you know, at the same time, there will be some benefits from that, you know, in terms of crime tracking and, you know, watching natural disasters unfold, volcanoes erupt, you know, hurricanes forming. We'll be able to see a whole bunch of things. We'll be able to watch crops. We'll be able to watch migration of animals, you know, sea life, all sorts of things. So there is upside that will help us, you know, manage our world, so to speak, but there will no doubt be also intrusion of personal privacy. So, you know, I think this is where we're going. There's no way to stop us from, because we want the benefits. People like the connection. They like to be able to reach out to friends and family through these platforms. They like the way it makes the world feel, you know, more in contact and smaller. But I do like the idea, I do insist on the idea that there is a balancing that can be had when there is full disclosure, transparency, and this notion that certain things have to be utilities and that certain people have to be fiduciaries. Not everything in the world can be about salesmanship and scale. Scale, scale, scale. You know, that's the MBA program in a nutshell, is take a small idea and magnify it to make it big. Why? So there's extra money for, you know, funneling off to people who aren't actually adding value to an enterprise, but are just passively there. That's why they want so much scale. And in the same token, if you look at the world of finance, what has been the primary dominating theme the past decade? Securitization, mm-hmm. which is another way of saying, let's magnify something with lots of debt and make it bigger, make it grow. And of course, those two concepts come crashing together in the form of incredibly overvalued assets, whether it be the shares of these companies, which have negative cash flow and are actually losing money, but everyone falls madly in love with them as an idea because they're so part of the popular consciousness. And then what people realize is, oh no, you know, I've bought into this story with great passion and naivete. And all of a sudden the pendulum swings back to a sort of a revulsion at the business model and a revelation that they weren't actually making money yet, or they weren't, you know, they didn't have a viable or sustainable business model really. And when people wake up to that, then you get this abrupt repricing and, you know, all sorts of bad things fall out. And then, you know, everyone feels that they were duped, even the quote investors. So we really just have to, you know, try and keep from falling over the edge of madly in love with concepts without asking serious questions and without having some people, as we say, that are commissioned to be the cops that have to continually take measurements or enforce laws and not let any one power become the dominant force. Back to the rule of law, Carrie. Boring. We've talked about it before, but there's a reason why civilization has always migrated back to this revelation that unless we have the rule of law, unless we have some parties that are literally not allowed to just take advantage of everyone, we're going to have anarchy and collapse.
Yeah, for sure. And what you're saying, the securitization really made possible all of the excesses of the 90s, the 2000s, really going back to when it was started, I guess, in the late 80s, if I remember correctly. It's really been the cause of everything. How much would a car cost if they didn't securitize auto loans? How much would a house cost if they had never securitized mortgages?
And got governments to back debt.
Oh,
that's ultimately the fatal flaw, was when governments began backing debt, because then they were holding the purse at the end of the day, and still are right to this day. And then this whole, you know, the revelation, as Alan Brown was writing this week, that the Federal Reserve, the FOMC committee, and all the central banks of the world are actually 100% owned by the banks that they're supposedly regulating. Once you realize that, and that there's no independence, this idea of independent just means independent from government, but ultimately funded by taxpayers because of the safety net that they continually put up.
Mm-hmm.
So once you realize that the FOMC is not a government institution, it's not, they're not fiduciaries, they're not there to protect us, we're the product. The banks are actually the customer, we're the product. And once you get that business model straight, then you say, oh, I see. So I can't rely on you, the sales force, to protect me, because I'm your product that you eat for breakfast.
Right.
Now I understand. Now that I know that's the lay of the land, now I can do some things to protect myself and to set up reasonable checks and balances in the system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you are the product. And it's pretty amazing to think that we got to this point where you once were a customer, somebody who is treasured, who was really catered to your needs, your wants, and now you've just become like just a lower point on the food chain here. You're not really important anymore as a consumer.
Yeah, you're like a dupe. You're like the lamb that the wolves consume on a daily basis. And it should make people mad when they realize that. It should make them want to be self-defensive. It should make them want to open their eyes and not go blindly after false prophets, you know. So I think this is a very healthy period we're in, where these institutions that have been, you know, never were in our best interests are being brought up for greater scrutiny, where these business models are being revealed to the world. I think it's a very important period we have to go through, and then hopefully we'll learn some intelligent reforms in the process.
Oh, we can only hope, Danielle. We can only hope, but unfortunately we don't learn them permanently. They have to be relearned, these lessons, over and over and over again, until maybe one day we'll reach a higher level of consciousness and know that we're being scammed.
Yeah, well, and the con man is as old as civilization, right? So, again, it's not a new thing. It's just that they have so many more avenues and opportunities to infiltrate, take advantage of now, and on a scale unprecedented. Like, people in other countries that never met you can use you as their fodder, you know, easily in this system. So, again, it just calls for greater self-awareness and greater controls and checkpoints at certain key nexus, not tons and tons of regulation, just key divisions between the sales force and the advisory, key divisions between the customer and the sponsor, you know, between transparency and disclosure and the individuals that are being used as the product. I think those are the things we now will have to sort of redraw in this new environment.
It just concerns me, these behemoths have gotten so big, they become like the banks. You know, they're too big to jail.
Yeah. And this goes back to trust busting, Carrie. This goes back to, why is it that in every 100 years or so, you get a period where these big conglomerates or concentrated powers in business and politics are broken up? Why? Because it has to be, because otherwise we end up in this, you know, living on the head of a pin and everyone else is in shambles and the concentration goes to the top, no multiplier effect through the economy, such extreme inequality of everything that no one has, you know, there's no growth or equilibrium in the economy. There's nothing good that's happening. It's all just wasted. And we're basically there. We're at this peak point where things have become too concentrated. And now we need to break up and not have just three or four behemoths in each area.
Right. Exactly. I wholeheartedly concur, Danielle. And hopefully we will see this come about shortly because I don't think the market can do it. It really does require government to break up these entities, split things up and kind of level the playing field. You know, government's best as a referee rather than a cheerleader. And let's see what happens next. Anyway, check out Danielle's work, jugglingdynamite.com. Feel free to send us an email. We love getting them. We'll read one next time. And the email address is kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. And Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.